On today's show, we're going to be talking to Bill King about the Trump effect. He says this is a common sense revolution. China, Japan, the Fed, they're in big trouble. But gold in the United States, they're looking good.
The McIlvaney Weekly Commentary, covering monetary, economic, and geopolitical news events.
I still like liquidity. I like gold in here because of the amount of the debt. The gold is insurance. Gold is insurance against all this debt. It's insurance against political catastrophe. Trump is a major provocation in the global system. And he just dropped a boulder into a pond. And there's going to be some real rocky waves and ripple effects. So you better have some hedging in here.
Now here are Kevin Orrick and David McIlvaney.
Welcome to the McIlvaney Weekly Commentary. I'm Kevin Orrick along with David McIlvaney. I always look forward to Bill King coming on. I have to tell you, Dave, the question in my mind since Trump has come in is what are going to be the effects? I mean, there's a lot of good that sounds like it's happening. He's acting very quickly. But the destabilization and the confusion as to the direction of a lot of markets, I have to admit, I don't know where we're going.
You know, whenever you have a restructuring, a corporation restructures, or in this case, a nation restructures, you've got a lot of things that change. And with that comes uncertainty. Not only here domestically, many good things can come of it,
right,
but there is still this sense of uncertainty for a period of time. I think what we captured in our conversation with Russell Napier last week was the idea that there is a bigger picture, and that is China, the central banks around the world, Europe, Germany specifically, they're all implicated in our restructuring because the way we've done business for 30 or 40 years has to some degree been to the advantage of the global community, and the benefits have been spread fairly wide and far afield. And that may not be the case with Trump. It may be that the America First policy, very good for us, not good necessarily for the rest of the world to the same degree. What are the implications of that? That's very important to figure out.
And that's why I think it was perfect that we had Russell Napier last week from an outsider's viewpoint looking in, and now we have Bill King from an insider's viewpoint looking out.
Bill, it's great to have you back on the program. I think somehow you must have angels whispering in your ear. It was almost a year ago you were on the program, and well before anyone I know, you were convinced that Donald Trump was going to be the next president. And again, I'm not sure where your sources are, but you've got good ones. I respect that.
Well, we did have some good sources as to what was going on with the FBI investigation into the disappearing emails and the hacking and whatever. But as far as Trump, it was just very... You know, if you looked at historic patterns, you know, honestly, he should have won by even a bigger margin, but, you know, with all the baggage he had, that hurt him. And, of course, he didn't help himself in a lot of ways. But, you know, we thought all along that this was going to be very similar to 1980 and with also some overtones of 1968 in there. You know, 80 on the economy, 68 with the protesting unrest and civil disturbances and the high crime, you know, that Nixon tapped into his silent majority, and 80 was... You know, Reagan, you know, people fed up with the economy and also Carter's feckless international policy. So all kind of coming together, and it just appeared that way. And the other thing is it's very difficult for a two-term sitting president party to retain office. And if you look at some of the professors that didn't look at polls but looked at historical patterns, they had it right. And one of the things there was in the 2014 midterm elections, the Democrats lost seat, and that's usually a death knell for the party, if you have the sitting president. Again, that occurred. And then there's just other things going, you know, internationally. And this was definitely an anti-establishment or change. This was a change from the polling. This is going to be a change election. And, you know, Trump fit the bill. I think the other guy who did fit the bill was Cruz in there. And I thought that's what it would come down to, was Cruz versus Trump fight. And it kind of did. And then the Democrats just did not have a good candidate. In a change election or something new, and that's why Bernie did so well, Bernie Sanders over there. And, you know, it just kind of played out the way it should have, except Trump should have won much bigger, but again, you get a lot of baggage.
You know, we had 8 years of Fed accommodation during the Obama administration, and now we've got interest rate hike cycles, which they don't usually get going when capacity utilization is at levels like we see now, currently about 75%, normally 80% or higher. And so this is kind of a first. We've got the auto inventory, which is stacking up on dealer lots. And so, and again, going back to industrial capacity utilization, it's probably not going to significantly improve straight out of the gates. What and when are the consequences of these anticipated rate hikes?
Well, that's the thing the market's wrestling with. I think why the market's been shopping sideways since December 9th was kind of the peak. So for 2.5 months, we're really doing nothing but shopping around. And you're right. They're digesting that. They're digesting the Trump after the euphoria when he got elected. But you know, when you're talking industrial production, a lot of these numbers and inventories, they're not the same meaning that they had in the past, because what's the industrial production numbers in China or Mexico or Vietnam? You know, what's their inventory levels? It all contributes together, but, you know, the international aspect, the globalization now, is different. And where is the inventory? It used to be if it sat here in the U.S. and you had a real problem, but now it could be sitting in Mexico, it could be sitting, you know, in China, it could be sitting on the high seas, you know, with the way that people move freight with the containers and the vessels and sea now, there's a lot of that going on now. I understand what you're saying here, but it's not just so much a supply issue now, because as you alluded to, all the 8 years of accommodation by central banks, there's a lot of inflation fuel out there because of that money. And what Trump is trying to do, and he said it, he's pretty clear. He wants to help Main Street, doesn't care that much about Wall Street. You know, the reversal of what we've had for decades or more. And that's the problem here, is when the Fed's created all this money, it never got into the real economy. We know that. Even back to Bush, when he did a lot of his tax reform and accelerated depreciation, whatever, after 9/11, and when he and Greenspan feared that depression was coming after the great stock bubble under Clinton burst. And then you had 9/11, but that didn't happen. The corporations in the U.S. bought back shares, massive repurchase. And if they did do any capital expenditures, it was offshore. It wasn't happening here. It was happening in Mexico. It was happening in third world countries. And you did have that third world boom. It's happening in China. So we're trying to do a restructuring here. Trump's trying to do the restructuring here. If the money does start coming back into the real economy, then you do have the problems with inflation. So the central banks created all this money. It went into speculation. It went into share repurchases. It went into financial assets. And it did not get in there. So we didn't spark the normal inflation that you normally would have. That's what the Fed is fearing. The Fed hears Trump. They understand what he's trying to do. And the outrageous thing that I see here is that in October, Janet Yellen was saying, we should let the economy run hot. Let's not be quick with rate hikes. Just this last week, she said, we better start hiking rates because we can't let the economy run hot. What changed?
Lacker saying the same thing. Let's go on a faster rate hike path. Yeah.
So what's changed? Because she said it's okay. We shouldn't let the economy run hot. Now, no, we can't do that. So is she being political? Absolutely. To agree. She shouldn't have said anything in October, waiting for the election. Or what was she trying to accomplish? So you're sitting there looking at what the Fed's doing, what they have here. They're kind of winging it. They kind of understand what Trump's trying to do. They got caught, you know, the last 2 years being political, not hiking rates when they should have. Now they're trying to make excuses, but they're killing themselves because the Fed tend to run their mouths too much. So they've left a nice track record there for people to compare what they were saying. And she's got a problem because of what she said in October. Now she's trying to change course in here. The other thing, of course, is you're seeing these industrial commodities are picking up here, and because Trump, which is what we're talking about, getting the money into the real economy, the industrial economy, more infrastructure. You're seeing today that, you know, he's meeting with automakers, the executives, and he's telling them he wants more plants here in the U.S. and we'll cut regulation. And this is what's very interesting. If you've listened to people over the years, corporate executives, one of the reasons there was not more infrastructure spending was because of rules and regulation. It's just far too expensive to build plants, and it takes years to do it. Trump's trying to streamline that. If that happens, you know, you're seeing like today copper's up over 2%, you know, the iron ore, some of these other things, which have in the past have been largely controlled by China. When China was buying commodities and when they quit buying them was what made these things, you know, dance around. But Trump, just today, they're talking about he wants more automaker plants. He signed executive orders to facilitate the construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline, the Keystone Pipeline, and he also signed an order that it has to use U.S. steel on the pipeline sections that are in the U.S. So these things, all of a sudden, you know, you see the steel makers doing better. You're seeing this going on here. And this is going to create a dynamic here, and the Fed's understanding it, that they are so far behind the curve. You actually hear them saying that. They're not saying we're behind the curve. They're saying we have to make sure we don't get behind the curve, which tells you that admission is they fear they're behind the curve. And there were fear if you start getting the commodities and the construction going, and that multiplier effect with employment and wages, they're going to really look bad. Because what will happen is the inflation will start going, you know, rates will start going, the long rates will go without them. They'll have to try to catch up with the short rates because these curves will be steepening. And then what happens is if they stop the expansion, Trump and everybody will blame them. And they're in a really tough position. I think today I saw that, you know, if you look at some of the bond market, some of the instruments and inflationary expectations, I think we're at a 2.5-year high. So your question is exactly right on. It's something the market's reacting to wrestle with. That's why you see gold very quietly is going up here to 2-month high. I think it's almost getting close to $100 off its low. And it's acting like it did last year, where it took off in the beginning of the year from an oversold position that occurred at the previous fourth quarter. So it's going to be an intriguing year. The big unknown here is how to start with Trump and the Trumponomics plays out. So far, he's doing what he said he was going to do. The thing, though, is where you can't throw all your eggs in the baskets because of what's going with China. China is really struggling. You know, they've been trying to peg their currency. They're trying to keep people from pulling money out of the country, out of the system. They've been pouring reserves in, records amount of reserves, trying to stabilize the banking system. And in addition, you know, you're seeing some of the data coming out, their lending is surging. They're trying to play this game where they're trying to stop lending into the housing market because the housing prices are going up so far in the speculation. They don't want political revolution, but the housing price is getting away. But on the other hand, they're trying to keep the economy, the bubble economy, inflated so they don't have rampant unemployment. They're trying to keep that going by lending like crazy into the economy. It's a very tricky game they're trying to play there. You know, any miscalculation or misstep, and that's going to be a major issue. And of course, you've got Trump now hammering on the Asian exporters. And he's making the case here that we're going to put tariffs on. It's U.S. first. We don't care about what's going on over there. And so when you're looking from a China perspective, everything they have going on, all the problems they're struggling with, you know, they've played the funny money for years. They've tried to keep the expansion bubbling up. And now they've got the tiger by the tail. And at the worst possible time, they get a guy like Trump coming in, talking about implementing policies that will impair their exports. And the other interesting thing is when he's talking with the tariffs, if you sit down for a minute and look at, he's made two judgments here. One is the reason all these analysts or idiots, whatever your terminology is, on Wall Street, who said if Trump's elected, stocks are going to fall 30% and we're going to have a crash in the global economy, we'll be in depression because he's going to start a trade war. Of course, the market went up, did the absolute opposite, shows how smart they were. But what Trump believes is we're already in a trade war. And it's hard to argue that when you look and see what is happening. You know, he's talking about gutted out factories, gutted out cities, the massive unemployment, on and on. It's easy to make that case. We have been in a trade war. And part of the other part of that trade war is the currency wars, with the Asian exporters keep debasing their currencies. He understands that. Now, what U.S. people have done, especially the globalists here, that we've had from Clinton, Bush, and Obama, they thought they would play this war in the currency market, which brings the Fed in because you're talking interest rates. And that was part of the QE. And we had all the competitive QEs was everybody wanted to base their currency so you could export, help your economy. But Trump, to me, it appears he's doing is he's saying, I'm not going to play that silly game. Why should I debase the currency? There's a dynamic. Everybody gets hit with that. Let's just put a tariff on. So what's the difference if we debase the currency 10% or if we put a 10% tariff on China? Well, he understands that if I debase the currency 10%, there's inflationary aspects. There also you're killing U.S. purchasing power, American citizens' savings. So let's just use the tariff to single out one person. And that way, if other people, you know, if Germany plays with us and China plays the right game, they're not getting hurt by the currency. The currency devaluation impacts a broad number of people. This way, we can single out countries with the tariff, and we don't have to play that silly game. We don't have to worry about the consequences of that. In some ways, it's what, in 1989, the San Francisco Fed president, Heller, said, look, when the stock market crashed in 87, we just start pumping money into the system. You know, the dollar went down, and then we have to worry about sucking all that up. Why are we doing it? If our concern is that the stock market has collapsed, why don't we just boost the stock market, use futures or whatever, and that way we don't have to worry about, you know, all that ancillary damage in this wide network casting. And this is in a way what Trump is trying to do here with the trade. And that's why he's getting ready to get rid of TPP and NAFTA. He doesn't believe in this type of trade deal where you're doing a blanket deal for a region. He wants bilateral one-on-one deals. And I can understand. You can understand the logic. From the corporation standpoint, they wanted the multilateral deals because it's just one-stop shop. Okay, everybody signs on. We all go and do the deal. But then you play the currency wars and you play all the other games. But if you're making one-on-one deal, it's like negotiating with a football team. Well, we're going to give all you guys this money, as opposed to you one-on-one, you cut your own deals type of thing. So this is a drastic change. We don't know exactly how it's going to play out. There's going to be a lot of different implications. So you're seeing the markets rallying, pretty strong rally here, and it's a persistent rally. It's not like you usually get where the traders jam in on the opening and then they chop around. We opened modestly better. We're just slowly going up, and I think a lot of it has to do with the news that's going on the tape. Keystone Pipeline, you got Toyota now talking about putting $10 billion into the U.S. and creating 400 jobs in Southwest Indiana now, or Northwest Indiana, whatever it was. But you're seeing this stuff moving forward, the meeting with the auto dealers and the headlines that are coming out. So there's a lot of headlines on the tape today about the industrial U.S. economy, you know, doing Trump projects here. The pipelines, which will create jobs. It's going to be also not just the pipeline jobs, but the oil industry saying this allows us then to build some other infrastructure and it'll stop some bottlenecks in our delivery systems and distribution systems and storage systems. Again, that means jobs. And the key here is the rules and regulations that you might start seeing, not just the infrastructure boom. People think, oh, he wants to build more roads and aqueducts or different overpasses and bridges. It's not that. It's the infrastructure. It's also all these other things, you know, different terminals for distribution and distribution facilities and whatever. So you're seeing that in the market today a bit.
You've got, though, the market, which is judging a rate of return on capital. And what we started up by saying is that he's going to be a lot more help for Main Street than for Wall Street. So you go back to that difference between who you favor, labor versus capital. And if the moves that he's making actually favor labor, the middle class, flyover states, are more positive and proactive at the level of jobs and maybe even economic activity, still, it seems like Wall Street should be looking at this and saying, this is less profits for us as it's more opportunity and cash flow ultimately to the man in the street. Again, Main Street versus Wall Street. Main Street wins. If Wall Street loses, why is the stock market just as happy?
The one thing that people are looking at is that if Main Street wins, Wall Street historically has won. That's how it used to be. The stock market was a gauge of U.S. economic activity. And then in the late 80s and 90s, basically under Greenspan, and then again under Bernanke, they looked at the stock market as an engine of economic growth with the wealth effect. The establishment couldn't believe that Ronald Reagan was right in his economics. And they actually started writing us out that, oh, the reason the economy boom wasn't because of Reaganomics, it was because the stock market boomed. Everybody felt good and they felt wealthy. And now, blah, blah, blah. That's why when Bernanke testified in front of Congress and they said, how do you know QE worked? His first response was, well, stock market's up. That tells you that's what he wanted. They thought we're going to create this boom by getting stocks up. So what Wall Street is thinking here is, well, if Main Street does better, then we will have the organic growth in the economy instead of the steroidal growth we had. If we get real growth, people have money in their pockets. These companies are going to be doing more commerce. There's more construction, yada, yada, yada type of thing. What we don't know, though, is if the stock market was trading 30% lower, it'd be real easy to rationalize a good rally. But the problem you have now is you're near at historic extremes for valuations. So you can see the economy doing much better and stocks going nowhere or actually going down here, especially if interest rates start ticking up in here. And the interest rates tick up, they're going to put more money in American consumers' pockets. That's been my argument with the zero rates and the negative rates, is you kill interest income, you force people to hoard money, people sit on their capital, especially retirees and people on fixed incomes. You create that negative effect there. That's going on all over the world. So Wall Street right now is not seeing any negatives. All they're seeing is positives. The biggest negative out there is historically overvalued, and the Fed is starting to move up rates here. And don't forget, Trump is not a Wall Street guy. And that's the problem. Now, this is over the last decade or so, every time you talk about a businessman or somebody, people are thinking, oh, it's Carl Icahn or, you know, Larry Fink or Warren Buffett. They're all Wall Street. They're all stock guys. Trump is not a stock guy. He's a real estate developer. So he is not concerned about the stock market, where all these other people are always focused on. And he just, again, thinks that you just do what's best for the economy, let stocks take care of themselves.
Wall Street wants the best of both worlds. It wants the old school, if Main Street wins, then Wall Street wins, but they're still holding on to a highly geared, highly leveraged system, which is vulnerable if rates start coming up. And can you have it both ways? Because certainly they are going to create some economic activity, but long rates go up. You know, if there's two bright lights, maybe it was autos and housing. And most recently, National Association of Realtors Affordability Index goes to its lowest level since 2008. So you've got home prices, which are high. Now mortgage rates are moving up with interest rates. What does that do to real estate? These are a few bright spots. Maybe you can overcome that from an economic standpoint.
Again, you're just looking at a stock market. Wall Street win because there'll be more issuance of bonds. There could be, you know, just a whole need of capital. And that's why you're seeing these banks who are largely democratic in their philosophies. You know, big government was always good for banks historically. But now all of a sudden you see them talking about Trump because they're talking about increased economic activity, transaction fees, more transactions. And that's what economy, that's what drives the economy, our number of transactions. So Wall Street, the other reason they got religion here is the retail just poured into the market. Since 2008, for the 8 years the Fed has been trying to get stocks higher, the average guy in America has been selling stocks into it. Now when Trump got elected, you had record inflows into ETFs coming in here for stocks. That's one of the reasons we got this overvalued in here is because the retail people are thinking, wow, it's going to be good for the economy. This is good for me. I feel good. Let's buy some stocks type of thing. So you're right. There's going to be a transition, and we don't know. We don't know how fast this thing can play out. What you're alluding to is that Wall Street's way ahead of itself, much like it did with Reagan. And that's a very good comparison. You ran like crazy, and then you took a really big whack. From April 81 to July, you know, you went down over 30%, the July of 82. You know, you went from, you know, over 1,000 down to what, 6-something in there, I believe. And that was very painful and then whack. And that's a very high probability that'll occur again. But eventually what happened was stocks boomed. But you had to get through that. And that's what Wall Street is thinking here. They're looking for the boom. They're not looking at what might happen with the transition period. So, yeah, it's a very difficult call for stocks right here. And that's why, again, we're trading sideways. People like what they think's coming, but, you know, the understanding rates are going up. We are very extended on valuations. And how long does this take before the economy really gets going? And you mentioned with the 8 years of easy money, are we on fumes economically? Do we have to, just like Reagan, do we have to roll over, take some of the hit, take some of the purge of the abuses of the previous administration before all the new things finally take hold? And you get what Bernanke was begging for, was the green shoots of an organic, you know, economic growth. You're right. It could take a while, and stocks are extended in here. But, you know, you can't run out here and make some really empirical decisions or statements here because this is really an unknown area. My feeling is we're probably getting close to making peaks here in stock, and then you have some kind of significant pullback and retrenchments while all this stuff plays out. I do think it'll take a while. I do think it'll be more like what happened in the Reagan transition.
Right. So every president since Eisenhower has experienced a recession sometime in the first 2 years in office.
Obama didn't get it because the bottom was when he came in. Well, January, the stock market bottom was February. The economic bottom was probably April or May. So, you know, he didn't get it. And that was largely what you said is 8 years of easy money. So we're really overdue.
The same thing happened with President Erdogan in Turkey. He came in at the market bottom and everybody thought he was an economic miracle worker. And it just was, he got lucky. He got lucky.
Exactly.
So, I mean, in that sense, can Trump avoid a recession?
No, I don't see how. Because the one benefit Reagan had, when Reagan came in, you had very high inflation. You had Volcker trying to kill. You had very high interest rates. So when Volcker finally relented in July of 82, and that's when Mexico and Brazil called up and said, we're going to default on the debt. So he said, okay, that's it. Enough of killing the inflation. You then had the biggest bond market rally since the Civil War. You know, you had short rates at 22%, and that long bond was 14.5%. When that stuff started coming down, you talk about what you did for housing and mortgages and construction. I mean, that was an unbelievable kick, and that's not going to happen. In fact, Trump's going to get the opposite. He's going to get higher rates, which Reagan didn't get. The other thing is the debt is so much higher. That's what we don't know, and that's what's sitting over on China. That's what's oversitting us, is when the rates start moving back up and all this debt, what happens? You know, where does this thing go? To me, the real problem with Trump could be the opposite of Reagan, where you get a surge for 12, 18 months, and then it just rolls over because everything's exhausted. As opposed to when Reagan came in, you know, you got the whack called the double dip recession there. As they talk, I think it was one long recession, but they talked it was a quick two dip recession, and then you came out and things started booming again. So that's why I tend to agree with you on this thing. It's much dicier. It's a much more difficult environment right now. And the other thing you had is you didn't have China sitting out there with all their problems, and Europe with all their problems, and the banking system problems. That's a big difference here. But I think that's the other thing Trump's trying to do with his America. He's trying to isolate the U.S. from all these other problems, and he doesn't want the entanglements, which is another reason why Bernanke was so reckless with the monetary policy and why he threw a couple $1 trillion into European banks, because of the entanglements here with our banks. So Trump just looked historically what was going on. And that's what people say, well, you know, Trump, he's changed his mind. You know, 5 years ago, he was against this or that or whatever. Trump just, you know, as a real estate developer and businessman, he's just looking at the information he has, and he's trying to figure out, you know, how to play this thing more as a business as opposed to a philosophy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've got budget deficit issues. I'd like to see tax cut. And there's a good possibility, if you look at the demographics, certainly over the next 3-4 years, Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security continue to go up. So some big line items rising as much as 4 times in the next 4 years. And we don't have the petrodollar recycling. We don't have the trade dollar recycling, or at least that is in question in terms of our foreign trade surpluses building in China and whatnot. We throw on tariffs and start a trade war or enter into a currency war with various places around the world. How do we finance our deficit?
Well, the same way you've been doing it, because where are they going to go? Trump understands what the average American understands and the globalists didn't want to say is we're losing a trade war. There is a trade war. But we have $600 billion a year, whatever it is. We're losing it. We've been losing since 87. 87 was the year the U.S. turned from a net creditor to a net debtor. Up to 87, the U.S. was getting more money from their investments. The U.S. corporations were bringing more money back into the company from their fixed investment in companies. By 87, the money was pouring out. So you're talking 30 years of losing a trade war. And that's what Trump's saying. We're talking about a trade war. We're in a trade war. If you want to start shutting down, fine, because then we quit losing money. That's one of the reasons why the dollar rallied when Trump got elected so strongly, is because you stop the dollar flows. You stop. You know, I just looked up here. We're going to run a $70-75 billion trade deficit with Germany. Germans are going out of their mind about Trump because they understand what happens when he starts putting tariffs on the BMWs, Mercedes, and Volkswagen. That hurts. And then it also encourages other people to start doing the same thing, because you've been told for 30 years, oh, you can't do that. We'll have a trade war. You're in a trade war, and they're killing us, and he's right. And that's why we have this huge deficit, is because every time they come in here, take a job away, somebody goes on welfare, they go on disability, they go on the government role. And the big corporations don't care because they still get money to buy products. And so Trump is telling companies, we're going to take the people off the government welfare, off the disability, off whatever, and you're going to give them jobs because you guys have been dumping consumers on the government. You're doing the opposite of Henry Ford, where Ford said, I'm hiring people, they can buy my cars. The government, we've been doing the opposite. Dump workers or bring in cheaper workers. Put other workers on welfare, put them on disability. And you know what? If I'm Walmart or McDonald's or General Motors, even though you don't have a job, you still buy my product because you get the freebies to buy the products. Trump understands that dynamic and that it's going to end. And he also understands the money's pouring out of here. You want a trade war? Fine. The one thing the U.S., and I, you know, I thought this 30, 40 years ago, I should say, the U.S. companies, one of the reasons we have never had the motivation to export like the Asians, is because the U.S. is such a great market, you didn't really need that. Anything you did overseas was a bonus, where Asia must export to feed their massive populations. You see the, you know, the China, the India, Indonesia, Japan, the size of these countries, their populations, they must export to feed themselves and to be able to bring in raw materials, or you'll have revolution. Trump understands that. We're doing a trade war. We're tired of this. You guys have been kicking us in the groin for 30 years, so I'm going to start kicking you in the groin. Now, if you want to fight fair, we'll pay it fair. But if you're not, you know what? If I have to put tariffs and you can't bring those products in, that's fine. Eventually, some U.S. company will pop up and produce those products. There's nothing you guys are producing that we need, that we can't do ourselves. And that's the beauty of the United States. Except for some semi-rare and some strategic metals, we're totally self-sufficient. Agriculture, energy, and that's the big thing to watch here is the energy. Because if he starts cranking the pipeline, the shale, some of the natural gas, more to drilling up in Alaska, up near in the Arctic Circle. The people that really should be concerned here is OPEC. Because once that starts going, it totally changes your dynamic in the Middle East also, in the geopolitics of this. So to me, that's the thing that's really, you know, I understand the infrastructureness, but if he really goes hard for this energy, and Trump isn't just a petro guy. He has made it clear he wants all forms. exported geothermal, solar. That's why Elon Musk has been visiting Trump and talking well, because Trump wants to pull out all stops on this for the not only be self-sufficient, to become a major exporter of energy. To me, that's the really exciting thing here.
You know, looking at risk, we don't fully know what tax policies are going to be, what regulatory changes will be, what he can succeed with. As you just mentioned, the changing nature of geopolitical relationships. And I understand the desire to think positive and sort of allow the new president to maneuver. But it seems like the market is operating with more certainty than it actually has on those matters. And does that just kind of go back to that point of maybe the market's ahead of itself?
Oh, sure, it's ahead of itself. Absolutely. But what the market is looking at and seeing is, well, we're actually going to do things that make sense economically and politically, as opposed to what somebody has a philosophy. This is a common sense revolt. And this is an Archie Bunker revolt here. Like, why are we sitting here worried about giving jobs to Mexico when we can't feed our own people? Or we have veterans here that are left dying and wasting away, and we're worried about bringing other refugees in here. That doesn't make sense to the average guy. Now, if you have some philosophy or you have a globalism thing, or even if you have a religious bent, the charity begins at home routine is what Trump is saying here. And that's why it's a common sense revolt he's trying to do here versus the Ivy League sophistry. Well, we can't have a trade war, but we're getting our brains booked. What do you mean? You know, we're running this enormous deficit. Oh, that's okay. That's actually good because of comparative advantage. Yeah. That's the ticket. Yeah, remember that economic theory where Trump is a businessman and he says, this is what works. This is what does. I don't care about your theory. I don't care about Bernanke's theories for 40 years or whatever. This is how the world is. And that's kind of the relief here. And again, all these idiot economists, sorry for the redundancy here, that are running around with what was going to happen with Trump was like, the big thing they miss is the reduction in regulations. Any businessman you talk to, any small or large, they've been getting killed on rules and regulations and bureaucratic red tape. And that, again, is anybody said economics. You've had your ISLM curves, you have this model, you have that model. I want somebody to tell me when you've seen a model come in that accounts for regulations and rules. Where is it? Well, it can't, because economics is pseudoscience to begin with. It's not physics. And they try to do mathematical models like this amount of tax cut, this amount of money supply gives us this amount of GDP. And it's garbage, because you don't have psychology and you don't have rules and regulations, because you can't quantify. I mean, how can you quantify the effect of lower rules and regulations? But that's what part of this is going on. The other thing that's going on here is, I don't want to call it a carrot and a stick approach, but again, the common sense. He's telling Apple and all these other companies that have trillion or whatever offshore, because of taxes, I'm going to give you a tax holiday, and I'm going to lower your taxes, but you're going to build your products here. And that's what he's saying. It makes no sense. You got all this money, and you're sitting in offshore, and you won't do anything with it except buy back your own stock. And you don't even actually bring the money back. You float bonds against that here, so you can still leave the money, and you buy back your own stock. But here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you an incentive to bring that money back, and I'm going to cut your taxes. But you're not going to go play in this silly game of keep repurchasing your shares. You're going to build plant equipment here, and the way I'm going to ensure that is I'm going to put a tax and everything you're bringing into this country. So that's what he's trying to do. You can see that. You know, that's, again, what you're seeing the excitement here, especially in some of the tech stuff, that, you know, they hated him. They wanted Hillary in. Virtually all the money from Silicon Valley went that way. But now upon further review, they're thinking, oh, yeah, this is actually will be good for us in the long term. The question is, what happens in the transition? Because it's not going to be seamless. It's not going to be that smooth. So I do believe the market is way ahead of itself, but it's very happy today.
You know, if we said, okay, this is a major change in American politics and maybe a healthy shift away from purely academic theory into a world of business practice. And you're right, seamless transition. There's some execution risk. We don't know exactly when things are going to get done. Yeah. But overall, you could say, well, this is a bullish thematic, not necessarily for the stock market, but for the economy. If this is such a bullish thematic, why wouldn't we just say, hey, let's skip out on gold altogether? Yeah, it's been performing well since the beginning of the year. Did last year too, as you mentioned earlier. But, you know, frankly, who needs it if we're talking about a brave new world here in the United States?
Well, because we have to think globally. Unlike a stock like IBM or Intel or General Electric, gold is truly a global asset. Everybody can own it. Everybody can participate in the valuation, and everybody can use it. And that's the thing here is, again, what you're talking seamless. If Trump pulls this off, what's going to happen to China, Japan, Germany?
That's not good.
And it's not good for them. And it's what he's saying is, you know, we'll have bumps here. You guys are going to have a lot more than bumps. We've sat here from 8 years with the financial crisis. And even the central bankers that created the problem and then were trying to rescue it said, we need restructure, we need reform. We'll keep pumping money like crazy. And the politicians just don't have the incentive to do it because it's a tough choice. They get thrown out. You can't keep running your welfare state and borrowing forever. And that's what Trump will do, is going to force them to change. And what was the whole restructuring for Asia? Was to get your domestic markets going, increase your own demand there, so you're not solely reliant on exporting to the United States and to Europe. That's the restructure. And for Europe, it's get off your butts and start manufacturing, doing things. Get everybody, you know, quit the 30-hour work weeks and the 2-month vacations and the, you know, the early pensions. You guys are going to have to start producing more. You can't just rely on Germany to produce goods and then support the EU welfare state. And this is what Trump will do. And that's why they're going out of their minds, the foreign leaders. He's going to force them to do something. He's going to force them to do something or they're going to collapse. So what's going to happen? We don't know. Likely will happen. Some will make the reforms and the restructuring. Others won't. They'll get hammered. There'll be global turmoil, political, whatever. So then that's one of the props under gold here. There's a factor here with China, Europe. It's not just the United States. And that's why I think gold gets to be a tough call once it gets up around 1250 and above. I think when it gets lower, it's cheap, especially from the U.S. standpoint, what was going on here. But as it starts getting a little bit higher here, and you're thinking of higher interest rate risk, I think it puts a little bit of a top on gold until we let this thing play out. And you can't get too far over your skis here. I think the stock market has gotten way over its skis in here. But this is going to take time. It's going to take a transition. I think one of the reasons you're seeing the rally in here is that, and it's kind of funny reading the headlines, Trump signs executive orders, allows the pipelines, fulfilling a promise. It's almost like they're stunned he's actually doing what he said he was going to do. And I've read this commentary the last 2 days. Now that Trump's in and he's actually sending these executive orders out there and pushing these policies, it's like, oh, he really means this. Oh, he is really doing this. That's, I think, why you're getting the rally into Dow Transportation up 1.5%. It's the strongest sector by far. And again, the reason that's the month's the most economically sensitive. No, you do have earnings week this week, and you're getting good earnings, and that helps also because, you know, companies are reporting solid earnings in here. But this, again, is the so far, so good type of thing that the market is seeing. When does it end? You know, I think we'll be just like Reagan. You did okay in January, and then you start pulling back hard in February. And then late March and early April, you ran up again, then you rolled over. I think that's not a bad algorithm to follow right now. It's been holding very closely to the election. The trajectory of the stock market has been very similar to 1980. And I think you can continue to watch it to see how this thing plays out. But it's not as easy as the stock market is telling you how easy it's going to be.
We've seen some of the Fed chiefs voicing concerns over national debt and fiscal policy, which is interesting because they were pretty quiet during the Obama administration. And it makes me wonder, you know, what kind of market machinations can the Fed trigger? Let's call them Janet-generated declines. What can they do as sort of a buffeting? You've got Trump who says, well, I'm going to do this and that. You may have a different political agenda, people with different sets of ideas. Again, theories, you've got, what, 700 PhDs at the Fed, and they've got a different set of ideas. Why not raise rates, create a little pain, and try to create some discrediting of the man in office?
Because there's a difference. The political environment's against them. You ask the average guy in the street, you ask the average person on Wall Street 30 years ago, who were the Fed presidents or who was the vice CEO? Everybody knew Volcker, of course, because, you know, what he was doing. But very few people knew Preston Martin was the vice chairman. They didn't know who your presidents were in the districts. Nobody cared because they weren't that big of a factor. But then once you lost the U.S. economic growth that really was running the stock market, you got into financial engineering. Wall Street hung on every word. I mean, you get some little idiot Fed official say something and the market jumps all over the place. And they're really not that significant. But they tried to tell everybody what it was, ego out of control. And the one thing that they didn't see, and they're realizing now, you know, Greenspan, they knighted him in England, always the smartest man ever. Now, come on, please. Everybody knows the guy knows that's not true. The guy's a horrible forecaster of economics. He's always been. So then the bubble blew up. All of a sudden, he wasn't such a genius. Then Bernanke came in. And then he's going to save the world from depression. And he killed the average American and, you know, just the whole routine. This concentrated wealth and income, it hasn't been seen since the robber baron days in this country. So all these guys are blowing up. And then you just, all you have to do is look at the opinion polls. The Fed is right down there with the media in Congress as far as approval. People are fed up with them. So they understand us. You might have the high and mighty on Wall Street give them money and kowtow them and bend down, prostrate themselves in front of them. But the average guy does not like the Fed. They hate the Fed, in fact. They know. And you got a different administration. You're going to get audited. You know, the Republicans are putting this bill through. Not only Trump hates the Fed, he's kind of told you that. He's told you who he hates on the Fed. They don't feel bulletproof now. They've got a problem. And they also understand that because they screwed up here. They kept Obama economy going. They should have been raising rates in 12. Instead of giving you QE3.0, they should have been hiking rates, but it was an election year. And it looked like a tough election, and they didn't want to fool with that. Then they just kept the game going. Remember all that, we're going to raise. No, we better not raise. The stock market, the volatility that was going up and down with the tapered tantrums and whatever here, now they got a problem. Because if the economy starts picking up, you're going to get inflationary pressure. Again, we have all this fuel, inflationary fuel that they laid out there. They want inflation. Well, you're going to get it. The problem is they understand. You get the real economy going. You got all this inflation fuel out there, and they are behind the curve. They know it. The fact that they're saying we're concerned we're behind the curve might get behind the curve tells you they already know they're behind the curve. They see it in the expectation. They see it everywhere. And now they'll take the hit. If the economy starts going and the commodities start really flying, and you would think oil would go down today with all the pipeline news and Trump's policies, but it's going up here. And part of it is because they just think the demand is going to start going crazy here. And if this starts going, the Fed is in deep, deep trouble. And, you know, Fed's got a number of these presidents are up, and I think 5 out of 7 governors are up this year or something I was reading in here. In the next 18 months, these people are going to be gone. They're going to be replaced. But the thing is, they're going to take the hit here. They're going to take the political hit, and they've got people that want to punish them now. Where in the past, they were hands off. Everybody in Congress understood that the Fed easy money was their ally because they didn't have to make tough decisions. They could give you everything you want and not move your taxes to the moon. Now, it's the opposite. And that's what the Fed guys, why they were so arrogant, because they knew we were papering over all the policy mistakes that Congress makes and papering over the gutlessness of the Congress for not making the tough decisions. And Trump came and said, I'm going to make the tough decisions. And I'm dragging Congress, so I don't need you. And now they've got a problem. And you notice now is you don't see them around as much, talking as much. Even Draghi gave you a very dovish speech the other day. Stocks tried to rally and immediately rolled over. They're not the game. The central banks aren't the game anymore. Trump and China are the game going forward.
Central banks are still making a market in European bonds and in Japanese stocks and things like that. And there's a footprint in the market. When I asked you earlier about the U.S. bond market and how we would finance our deficit, you said, well, where are they going to go? Are you talking about folks overseas representing significant traffic into U.S. treasuries just because you look at the chaos overseas and it's the best place to be?
Exactly. Now, that's always been the case. But you get concerned. You know, when the bonds get hit, there's concern. Just like in 1970, 1980, you know, they saw the U.S., saw Carter moving away from a leadership role. You know, he let the Sandinistas in Nicaragua, he let Russia go into Afghanistan, he let the radicals take over Iran. And people said, oh, he's withdrawn from the U.S. stage, which was what Obama did. Obama said that. I don't like America so strong. Huh? Excuse me. So that becomes a problem. And just what you're saying is true. You got all this chaos going. In China, that's the interesting thing. China's been selling U.S. bonds like crazy to support their financial system because they need the dollars now. So that kind of worked for them that they were able to build a reserve. But the people in China don't want the one. They want it out of it. They're afraid it's depreciating. And it's going to depreciate more with Trump coming in here. So you're right. When you get a strong leadership, that's what happened with Reagan. Reagan had a problem. He came in, not only did you cut rates, and the dollar started roaring. And when the dollar goes up, foreigners want U.S. assets. They buy U.S. bonds and stocks. And that's probably another prop you're getting under the mark here. So a lot of the Europeans, and especially the globalists and the leaders in Europe, the Solons there, they don't want a strong United States. They want a weak United States, except when we have to come and fight a war for them, then it's different. But by and large, they want to be the big cheeses and the big chiefs, and they don't want the U.S. exert influence over them. But this is Trump is giving it the opposite way here on these guys. And I think you could see this in the early stage of the rally, that we saw this really strong buying for the first 2 hours of the sessions. And that was the European, because Europe closes after 2 hours, New York Stock Exchange time. Europe closes at 11:30 Eastern time. And then you would see that nice early rally, and then the Europeans went home, their orders went home. And you even see that with the Asians. They trade usually the first half hour is the Asian orders come in. And then they go, but the Europe exchanges close 11:30 Eastern time. So you can see there's a big component. Now, that worked against Reagan because the dollar got so strong. I mean, the bonds were rallying so much in stocks that that's when they had to have the Plaza Accord in the summer of 1985 and cut the value of the dollar. Now, the one thing Trump is getting here is the dollar's backed off. the one fear here was the dollar was just getting so strong here that it would undermine anything he wanted to do here as far as the policies here with imports and trade. That would just absolutely hamstring him, but it's kind of rolled over here. And the bonds have weakened in here a bit now, too, today. But, you know, the market just continues to chop. Nobody knows how this is going to play out. It's going to be a process. But for the time being, people are looking for all the roses. You know, they're not thinking about any of the thorns that are going to come up with this rose bush here. So, yeah, I think we're just keep playing the 1980, early 81 algorithm. We're tracking it very closely. But at some point here, something bad's going to show up in here, and then we'll see how the market tolerates that.
Yeah, volatility, it's been virtually non-existent for the last month, month and a half. Trading range, tightest band over the last month in stock market history. What does a lack of volatility communicate to you?
Confusion. When you get confused, you withdraw. The stock market's become a market of traders and fast money and financial engineering. In the past, the market was run by real investors, and then the parasites would nibble around the edges. Well, we've turned where the parasites are the market. And of course, it wasn't. When Trump got elected, you saw investment-grade money come in. Institutions came in, public came in. Now, the institutions might not have been bullish, but when your mutual fund, all of a sudden, after 8 years of redemptions, all of a sudden you see money flowing in, you know what's coming. You know, you better get in the market, and it keeps coming, and you got to get ahead of that. So you start committing. And we did that. And then, again, at December 9th was kind of the momentum top in there, and then we've just been dropping sideways. Now, right now, we're trading up near the highs of some of the major indices, which is what we've done here in January and even in December, and then we've backed off. So, you know, we'll see if they go through tomorrow. But small, when you get very narrow bands, traders and investors are pulling away. They don't know what to do. They don't want to short because they're afraid of a day like today popping up. They don't want to get long because they understand this is very overvalued and this is going to be a tricky path. So, you know, people technically, they say, well, the market's coiling for a big move. Yeah, that's correct. But on the fundamental side, what's lurking there is uncertainty and indecision, and then people move away. And they're waiting. Wait for that. I think is the most prudent thing now is let this thing play a little bit. And the Dow had been previous today, I think it was down, what, 6 of the last 7. So it was time to get some kind of bounce back rally. On a very short term basis, you were oversold. On a long term and intermediate basis, you're historically overbought here. But on a short term and a trading basis, you've been down for a week and a half or so. So this makes sense that you're getting people, traders in here jumping around in here. But and there's a lot of good headlines going on today about what Trump is doing, and anybody that is short, you're pushing him into the market in here today. But this is highly uncertain. And again, if we were lower, if we were 30% lower here, I think it'd be a pretty easy decision that you should be looking to get long stocks. However, now it's a much more difficult decision.
Yeah, I was interested in your opinions coming into the election, and I'm kind of glad we waited to have the interview until after the election, because this has been absolutely fascinating. Set up.
Oh, it is. Yeah, absolutely. They talked about the Reagan Revolution, and it was big because he was peeling back a lot of the welfare state, a lot of the theories, economic, social, and financial theories that had sprouted up in the previous 20-some years. Trump is doing the same thing, but it's even more so. It's even more so because he has no political background. The way he ran the campaign, the viciousness, the way he's going after the media, and the way it continues to be, this is different. You know, when Reagan was a great communicator, he was your uncle that came in, laughed, told you a joke, kind of, if he needed to drop the hammer, he would, but he was kind of that easygoing, likable guy. Trump's the opposite. Trump's just confrontational, but that's the mood of the country. The country is mad, it's upset, it's confrontational, and it wants change. And we'll see if they like it when they get it, though.
Right. Well, if you could fast forward 4 years, and he's wrapping up his term, and Bill King decided for whatever reason to just take a break. Markets are busy, crazy, and communicating all kinds of divergent signals. And you had to put your money somewhere for the next 4 years and wake up 4 years from now or re-engage the markets 4 years from now with another transition. Where would you put money today? Asset class opportunities and vulnerabilities?
I would be a very balanced portfolio because the uncertainty is so high. Again, because this is an unprecedented campaign, unprecedented election. He's in an unprecedented environment, and he's trying to really do unprecedented things. Remember, Reagan had some conservative philosophies, no question. But he was a globalist. You know, he was another one with the free trade. He's the guy that started the movement for immigration from Mexico to pour in. And he's the guy that turned California from a Republican state into a Democratic state because he bought the argument. He brought in George Bush and the globalists and the East Coast elitists, the Rockefeller wing of the Republican Party. He wanted to be the great uniter for all that. Trump's the opposite. So to me, this is, you better have a portfolio of, I still like liquidity. I like gold in here because of the amount of the debt. The gold is insurance. Gold is insurance against all this debt. It's insurance against political catastrophe. Trump is a major provocation in the global system. And the U.S. is by far the biggest player. And he just dropped a boulder into a pond. And there's going to be some real rocky waves and ripple effects. So you better have some hedging in here. The thing to be the most careful of the bond market. I think you better be really short in your duration there because things can change so quickly. I'd be careful with the stocks in here because they're so extremely overvalued in here. I'd be very careful. I think you have to do your work and try to have a diversified approach in there also. But I'd be really careful, especially with some of the social technology stocks that are really stretched and overvalued. But I think you got to be balanced because this is just a very, very difficult environment. And again, we just had an unbelievable disruption into the market system. And anybody that's an engineer understands when you have systems and you get a historic disruption in there, you know, we don't know how good your models are or whatever here, but there's going to be some problems here that people have not seen.
8 years of sort of fending off a deflationary trend or threat. And what are the odds at this point of an inflationary surprise? And has Wall Street or the average investor kind of accommodated that in their portfolio allocations at this point?
Well, that's what the market's looking at. And remember, stocks like inflation in the beginning. And you'll see Buffett and these other people, that's the bet they've made is stocks. The best hedge against inflation is a good business that can pass on those costs. The problem is, can you do that? I mean, that's what Buffett's always made at. Where you run into problems is when the inflation starts impairing the economy. And the long rates go up and the central banks have to react. Then you get killed. But if anybody was learning previous to 1980, anybody who went to business school, you learn portfolio theory. It was very easily. You buy bonds and you buy stocks. And when the economy is going good and you think you're getting inflation, it was actually, you go back and look at classical textbook. If you think you're going to get inflation, you buy stocks. You sell your bonds. And then the other corollary is when things get really good and the economy is doing too well, you sell your stocks, you buy bonds. Because when things are going good, you don't want many partners, so you buy stocks. When things are going too good and you want to get rid of risk, you want a lot of partners. So sell your stocks, buy bonds type of thing. That's kind of, I think, what's playing out here. There's the market, you could see it. You know, they keep talking about the reflation trade. You can see it in the bond spread. You can see it in the commodities. And that's what part of what is driving the stocks in here. And you're seeing it's the material stocks. Look, the transportation's made an all-time high in July 2008. And we were at least two quarters into recession and crisis. If the stock market is so prescient and the transportation's averages are the best economic tracker, why was that going on? Because oil is at $140. And the transportations do well when there's inflation. That's why Buffett bought Burlington Northern. Because when there's a big inflation, your grains, your oil, your commodities go and the rails make more money. Rails are a kind of an ersatz inflation play. And that's part of what's going on here, too, with the transport today. Just going berserk. I mean, again, by far, they're the only index up more than 1%. They're about 1.6% now. And that's it. The market is smelling inflation. And the Fed is finally figuring it out, but they look like complete idiots. They should have been hiking it, and they didn't because of their election year. They did the same thing they did in 2012. The Fed has a very big problem right now. So you got a big metal rally. You see the metal stock, Freeport's at its highest level since 2015. The market is telling you we expect inflation in a kind of a big way here.
Well, we could go on for another 5 hours, and we should do that over lunch in Chicago.
Oh, anytime.
Well, thanks for joining us in our conversation today.
Oh, anytime, David. Thank you very much.
Well, Dave, being somebody who watched All in a Family as I was growing up, I remember the Archie Bunker statements, and he couldn't believe the ridiculousness of the way society was changing. I would say that that's what Bill King's talking about, Trump looking at with globalization, and he's rejecting what we've seen for the last 50 years.
It's why the man in the street is saying, this kind of does make sense. It is the Archie Bunker revolt. No, there's not a seamless transition as things change from the world that was to the world that may be. And there's a reason to keep your eye on the ball. There are many positive aspects of what may occur and some maybe unintended consequences. Regardless, it promises over the next 4 years to be a fascinating show to watch.
Thank you for listening to today's McIlvaney Weekly Commentary. We'll see you next Wednesday. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at ICA Gold for our latest updates and market thoughts.
And you can follow me at David McIlvaney if Twitter is of interest to you. If you want to learn more about us and what we do, visit us online at McIlvaney.com. If you have questions about either precious metals or portfolio management, we've made investment recommendations for 40 years, and our experienced advisors would be happy to help clients preserve and diversify their portfolios.
And of course, David, they can always call us at 800-525-9556.
This has been the McIlvaney Weekly Commentary. The views expressed should not be considered to be a solicitation or a recommendation for your investment portfolio. You should consult a professional financial advisor to assess your suitability for risk and investment. Join us again next week for a new edition of the McIlvaney Weekly Commentary.